everyone. Thanks for joining today's Microsoft Virtual Academy. Today's session is going to focus on digital civility, and it's all about making the internet safer. With me today is Matthew Haynes. Thanks for joining me, Matthew.
Thank you.
Would you like to tell the audience a bit about who you are and what you do?
Well, Megan, I'm a computer studies teacher. I teach from grade 7 all the way through to grade 12. I teach computer applications technology, and that's pretty much what I do all day, every day.
But Matthew, you're not just a teacher. You also have a great blog and are really inspirational to other technology teachers. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, I did start a teacher's blog a few years ago for computer applications technology teachers. And the whole goal was to kind of get teachers to communicate with each other, work with each other and collaborate, but specifically being online together and sharing our resources with each other. And that's been going for 4 years now.
And how many teachers participate?
I've got probably about 1,000 teachers actively working together on the website. And we have a Facebook group as well. And it's quite busy.
So Matthew, you are really someone who's using the internet for good.
I hope so.
For collaboration, using social media to get teachers sharing ideas, sharing resources. But today we're not going to necessarily talk about the power of the internet to do positive things. We're going to talk about how the internet's often a dark and dangerous place, and how schools can do something to make the internet a safer experience for their students.
Mm-hmm.
Have you had any negative experiences online at your school or with the technology that you're involved in?
We've not really had too many negative experiences. We've had a couple of wake-up calls in terms of how students can use the internet for their own gain. We've had instances where students were photographing teachers in class and sharing those pictures with their friends, and they were harmless, to be honest, but the potential for dangerous materials is always there. So we had to deal with that.
And I don't think you are the only school that's had this issue. You know, it's often in the newspaper, in the press, about students using cell phones or using internet access to take photos and share inappropriate images.
Very much so.
But it's not necessarily about banning devices or sort of cutting off the Wi-Fi at the school to make those problems stop. In your experience, what's been a better way of dealing with that?
The best way of dealing with that is more to create an awareness of what the internet actually is, what social media is and how it works, and then the potential pitfalls and downfalls of social media. A lot of students didn't realize, for example, if they were tweeting things online or putting stuff on Facebook or Instagram, that the audience was much larger than just their friends. And so we had to create an awareness with our students that there are repercussions to putting things online or to sharing things via social media. And so I would often bring that into my lessons in class. I would chat to them and say, right, how many of you are on Instagram? And how many of your parents know you're on Instagram? What do you put on Instagram? Do you know who owns those photos once they're on? What happens if you've deleted something and someone's taken a screenshot, for example? So an awareness and educating the students was the primary goal.
And it's not necessarily about terrifying the students, but raising awareness. They're going to be on these platforms anyway. And even if the school bans devices or doesn't give them access to those platforms using the school Wi-Fi, they're going to find ways around them, and they're going
always
to be on those sites anyway. So I think the way you go about it, where you show them the consequences of their action, in a way of teaching them as opposed to punishing them, it sounds like a good plan.
Yes. We had to take some practical steps as well in terms of our actual network at school. We had to kind of get a decent firewall up and running. We had various filters running which would identify keywords or phrases and then block certain web pages from being displayed. So we had to still put that in place. So although we could educate and make our students aware, we still had to put a protective fence around them to keep them safe.
Okay, so it's about having good systems and firewalls in place, but also doing the education.
Exactly.
So that if the bad stuff finds a way through your firewall, or if children are exposed to that content outside of the school space, they know how to behave appropriately.
Hopefully we can trust them to be responsible and make the right decision.
So Matthew, it sounds like your school is on the right track and doing good things. But let's talk for a bit about South Africa generally. And Microsoft's recently done some research into civility, safety, and interaction online. And they actually have found some very sobering statistics, particularly when looking at internet civility in South Africa. The aim of this research was to shine a spotlight on the darker side of the internet and to understand online threats, because ignoring the threats doesn't make them go away. Mm. But if you're aware of them, you can deal with them appropriately and educate, in the case of the work we're doing, teachers and students about threats that they may encounter and what to do about them. So they did this research into 14 different countries, and in each of those countries they interviewed 250 youth and 250 adults to find out about their experiences online. And they asked a range of questions. First of all, they asked people for their perceptions about how they felt about online civility and safety online. They asked people which risks they'd experienced, how concerned they were, how often these online risks had occurred, what consequences and actions were taken, and where people went to find help. And you've obviously looked at some of the research, but did anything stand out for you, or were you surprised by anything that they found?
I was quite surprised, to be honest, that so many people have been exposed to so many dangerous activities or materials online, especially in the younger ages, which shows me that we're missing something in terms of education and awareness, that students or teenagers aren't really being responsible with the way they use their devices, whether it's a tablet or a mobile phone, and how they're communicating with their friends or family. So I was quite a bit worried about the fact that it was so many in the younger age groups that were exposed to this. And I don't know where the line is. Should that have started at school or at home with the parents, maybe securing the devices better with software or passwords or something?
And maybe it's a case of parents just don't actually know where to start, or even what the threats are.
Yeah.
You know, in a country like South Africa, people haven't had huge amounts of internet access until fairly recently. Mm. You know, unless you had a job that involved having a computer and access to the internet, maybe the internet wasn't something you were exposed to.
Yes, yes.
Whereas now with smartphones, more people have access to the internet, you know, from their phone. So that's why I think some of these risks are becoming more and more prevalent.
Yes, it's kind of like standing in front of a wave at the beach, and this huge wave is about to crash on you and there's nothing you can do about it. Whereas if you had a surfboard or a life jacket or something that could help you navigate this wave, you'd be a lot safer. And I think that surfboard or life jacket is kind of our knowledge on the dangers of the internet and how we can behave or how we can protect ourselves while being online.
Yeah. Something that was interesting to me in the research was that young people were actually better at seeking out solutions or knowing where to go for help compared to the adults that were interviewed. And I think of myself as a parent, if I wasn't in the field that I'm in, I probably wouldn't actually know what my child was doing, what sort of chat group she was on. Mm. I mean, my 11-year-old is on some social platforms that I'm not on. and I'm actually on quite a few of them. So it's also about not ignoring what's out there, but about sort of knowledge being power.
Mm. Very much so. And I think especially in terms of, as you were saying, being a parent, parents are the last ones to educate themselves about their children's online habits. And it's crucial, I think, that any parents should be aware of what is available and what potential damages can take place, or what threats are available online, and figure out how they can educate their child and protect them as well.
Yeah, and not just sort of hope for the best or, ignore the problem. I know in our family, before my child was given a cell phone, we had a very serious discussion about, the rights and responsibilities of cell phone sort of ownership. Mm. But I think part of where that discussion came from was I've been exposed to what some of the risks are through my work, whereas maybe other parents aren't even aware of what's out there.
True.
So in terms of headlines and main findings from the research, the first finding was actually quite positive, and it was that most people expressed positive sentiments about civility online. Now, this whole concept of internet civility is a fairly new one, but it's really just about the internet being a civil place. Is it a polite, friendly environment that's conducive to finding information and collaborating with others, or is it an evil place? And most people have found that the internet's fairly civil, so that was a positive. But 65% of those surveyed had been a victim to at least one online risk. And you were saying earlier you found that quite surprising, that the figures were so high.
Yes, very much so.
And maybe it's about, do you have sort of systems in place that block out some of these threats? I mean, you've got an online blog. Have you had to put measures in place to protect it and to protect yourself?
I have. Because my blog is available 24/7, that means that I would have to log in via the internet. And I have specific software monitoring my blog constantly. And the number of attacks that take place where people are trying to log in as an administrator onto the Tech Teacher's blog is crazy. It's thousands. I mean, I'll get a couple hundred hits a day of just people trying to log in as an administrator just to cause trouble. You know, for no other reason, and it's quite scary.
And how do you sort of keep your blog safe? Do you change the passwords regularly, or?
Well, what I do is I don't really change my passwords a lot, because I make sure that I choose very strong passwords. I look at all the various downfalls of the platform that I'm using, and I make sure that I patch up any holes. For example, the database that I use. I make sure that I don't use the default table names. I don't use any default passwords or usernames, things like that. So your standard, your regular hacker will go with the defaults. And already I've blocked them because of that. So just changing anything that would be default to something completely personalized already makes it a lot safer.
So having a password that's something like password one is not a smart move.
No, not at all.
So the idea is to sort of make those passwords hard to crack, and hopefully the attacker just moves on to something else.
They normally do.
I know if my email address is on the SchoolNet blog and the SchoolNet website, because that's where I work, and our contact details have to be there because, people write to us legitimately wanting information about our courses or different programs we're offering. But from time to time, our details also get picked up, by spammers. Mm. And I wouldn't say it's a horrific attack. It's not like, I'm being stalked online. Mm. But I certainly do get, a fair bit of spam. Mm. And we've sort of, we keep our filters up to date. We have our, our virus software in place on our devices, and we update that regularly. And obviously, if I do get email that comes from a spammer that slips through the net, I then block that person.
Yes.
So I think people have to be, proactive to some degree.
Very much so.
sort of set those filters, block people, unsubscribe from mailing lists that that you haven't genuinely signed up for.
Yeah.
And be proactive. But let's talk a bit about more dangerous attacks. Harassment, unwanted contact, damage to reputation. Have you had any incidents around this at your school, or have you been okay from this?
Not anything major that I can recall. But in chatting with my students, whenever we get the chance and we get to chat about technology, society, ethics, morality, how we use tech today. It was interesting because just last week I was running a survey on all my classes, and they're choosing their top five most used social media apps. And I asked them, have any of you ever had someone say something about you or send you something that was inappropriate or hurtful or abusive? And the number of students that put up their hands was quite alarming, because they would get messages from people simply because someone had their phone number, but they wouldn't know who that person was. Or they'd get pictures. Snapchat's a big one, which is very dangerous if you don't know who you're communicating with.
For sure.
And yes, it was very interesting. So we have had students have experienced that, but nothing in a personal capacity at the school that I'm at now.
Okay. So, when you and I were at school, we didn't have, smartphones.
Oh, no.
It's not necessarily that we were a whole lot nicer to one another than children are now.
We were more direct, weren't we?
Exactly.
In their face.
but back when we were at school, people would maybe pass back sort of nasty little notes about one another, or, you'd maybe have a bit of a sort of punch up, sort of on
after
the playground
school,
at break or whatever. whereas now, that sort of nastiness or meanness can manifest itself through these electronic forms.
Yes.
And the problem is there's the potential for that nastiness or that meanness to go sort of much further than a little note.
Yes.
Sort of saying something mean about somebody that was maybe passed amongst two or three children back when we were at school.
Yes. It's much more exaggerated now. It's the abuse or the maliciousness or the intent to hurt someone emotionally, I think, is on a much deeper level now than it's ever been back, if we compare to when we were in school. Simply because there's this space between you and the person that you're attacking. There's this, you're anonymous in a sense, and they feel very powerful behind their keyboard. And it's sad in a way, because that's where, that's why we have trolls.
Yeah.
They get online and they type what they want and let everyone else fight it out. But it's very scary, actually.
Yeah, and I think what you were saying about being a little bit anonymous behind your keyboard, children perhaps will say something online that they wouldn't say directly to another child's face.
Oh, yeah, exactly,
face.
Definitely.
Although if they said it to another child's face, it would maybe be sort of over in a few minutes.
Mm.
Whereas if you say something online,
it's always there.
What they need to understand is it's always there.
Yeah.
Even if something's deleted afterwards, somebody else might have taken a screenshot
exactly.
of it.
Yes,
or, know, that photo that you put up in haste because you were angry with someone. And then took down after you came to your senses, might still be out there.
Yes. In fact, I remember something I did a few years ago. I went onto Twitter and looked up students, and I found various profiles of the students I was teaching and what they were tweeting about. And so I started recording screenshots of all their tweets, which weren't always nice. And someone heard I was doing this, and they quickly let everyone know, so they all tried to take all their material offline. But it was too late. I already had all the data that I needed. And I presented to the school. We did a presentation on what are your children doing with social media? What are they talking about? What are the things they tweet about? And I showed them the tweets. And I disguised their identities and all the rest. But they were shocked. The parents were shocked. They could not believe that it was their own children. And it was a bombshell.
Okay, and also, even if, that group of students didn't enjoy, that exercise, Hopefully it's made them sort of think twice.
And more aware, yeah.
And hopefully the lesson's also been learned that at some point when they're looking for a job or applying for a university bursary, you know, somebody's going to look through their profile, you know, true, on Facebook, and is going to be able to see, you know, all of these photos of perhaps not their best self.
Yes.
So it's a valuable lesson for students to learn.
Definitely.
I mean, I find sometimes the nastiness isn't that explicit or that awful. Sometimes it's something as sort of innocent as not being part of a WhatsApp group, and a child then feeling, you know, left out or excluded.
Yes,
so it's not necessarily that other children are saying something mean or horrible about a child who's not on the group, but a child just feels left out or not part of things because they're not on it.
Yeah, and that's kind of this new term of internet civility, about being civil towards each other and showing respect for each other. It's the reason it's so new to someone like you and myself is that it's a new way of behaving in a different environment. It's an online environment now. We never had that environment as children. We just had the real world around us, and we had to learn how to behave in that environment. Now our children are being taught they need to behave in the real environment, the real world, but then they also have to learn how to behave in an online digital world, cyberspace. And it's very different because people are different and the way we communicate is different. And so it's a whole new way of behaving. So it's tough. It's tough for them as well.
And it's almost like a digital etiquette that they need to learn. It's not necessarily that what they're doing is illegal or immoral. Mm. It's more that it's just not nice.
That's true.
and we're trying to make the internet a nicer place.
Yes.
So we've already talked about sort of some of the consequences being severe. Fortunately, you haven't had anything too awful happen at your school. But, you know, in some cases, you read in the press about, you know, teenagers committing suicide over cyberbullying. So it really can be quite extreme. And, you know, through raising awareness of digital civility, we'd really encourage teachers to implement programs at schools and not ignore this or just sort of hope that nothing too awful ever happens to one of your students. And also, we'd like to just raise some awareness around where people can go to get help. And maybe students or teachers aren't actively being bullied, but maybe it's just learning how to make better use of their privacy settings on, you know, platforms like Facebook, so that, you know, not just anyone can see their photos or, you know, tag them in posts, but they actually have a little bit more control over that.
Yes, yes.
Tell me, you're a computer applications technology teacher. Do you actually teach some of this stuff, or is this something that students are just expected to figure out for themselves?
The reason I love the subject computer application technology is because it isn't just computer applications. It's also how to use technology within society. And we're very fortunate in this subject because in the CAPS curriculum, we have a whole section on society and the internet and working with people online, how to behave online. We call it netiquette. And so CAT actually does address that. And there's a whole section. It's not a very big section. It's about 10% of the year per year. But it's enough to raise awareness and provide a couple of tools that the students can use to look after themselves when interacting online via email or any social media applications. So okay. It is part of the curriculum.
Well, it's great to hear that it's part of the curriculum, but obviously not every student takes that subject.
True.
So it's great to hear that schools are putting in sort of policies that apply to all students at the school. You've got an acceptable use policy at your school. How does that work?
Well, basically, we make sure that the students and their parents or guardians are aware of what sort of internet access is available at the school, when they are and aren't allowed to use the internet access. And in terms of the content accessible, there is only so much that we can do as a school. We have firewalls and filters in place. We have as much security as we can, but the students are made aware that if they're going to use that to access material that is inappropriate or unethical, then we have to take steps to either, you know, remove the device from them and keep it for the term, or have a counseling session and raise their awareness of what it is that they're doing and the consequences thereof.
But you make it quite explicit that this is acceptable.
We do.
This isn't acceptable. And
yes,
these are the consequences.
Those are the consequences. That's correct.
So different schools may have, you know, policies that are sort of slightly different or that are applicable to their needs or their internet access. But I think if everyone is sort of made aware right from the start, including parents, so that they can also, you know, have that conversation with their child.
Very much so, yeah.
And don't have a child coming home saying, you know, my cell phone got confiscated at school because the teacher's mean. actually, it's because the child sort of contravened a policy that everyone was aware of from the start.
Yes. Yes, and it's a way of it's educating them and making them aware, and rather addressing it from a behavioral point of view and a respect point of view than a list of do's and don'ts.
Yeah, because I mean these different sort of cyber crimes that are out there seem to sort of change all the time, and new ones come out every day.
Yes.
In this research that Microsoft's done into this digital civility status, there were some forms of sort of cybercrime that actually I'd never heard of before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, until I went and looked it up, I didn't actually know what doxing is.
Doxing.
Do you know what doxing
is? I also had to look it up. So yes, when you basically go and dig up dirt on someone or as much information as you can, and you make that publicly available to everyone else. It might not be information that is specifically private, but it is information that they wouldn't want shared with others in a public capacity.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's its official name, doxing.
Doxing.
Now we know. But sort of something else was trolling, which is just, I suppose, be mean or sort of deliberately...
Just causing trouble for...
Putting bait out there,
yeah.
Sort of... trying to get a reaction to see what they do.
That's right.
And then there was swatting, which I hadn't heard of.
Swatting.
which is basically sort of getting emergency services to somebody's house, but there's no emergency happening. That one was very low on the list for South African crimes.
Yeah.
But you could see where it would play absolute havoc and emergency services wasting their resources and their manpower racing to address an emergency that doesn't actually exist while somebody really needs help and isn't getting it.
Exactly.
So schools obviously aren't going to list all of these saying, you know, you mustn't do swatting and you mustn't do doxing and you mustn't do trolling. But basically, through policies like the one at your school and a sensible policy that a school would put in place, would just say, use the internet responsibly and be accountable for your actions.
That's it.
And really, if students just get the general idea of, you know, don't do bad things, that's what they need.
Yeah.
Because they do actually know when what they're doing
the line is.
Isn't acceptable.
They just like to step over it now and then.
Even if it hasn't been sort of, you know, formally laid out for them. So the next slide talks about how mature internet markets had lower exposure to online risks. And here you can see that South Africa, of the 14 countries that were surveyed, actually fared worse in terms of these online risks happening to either the person being interviewed or that person's family and friends. So 78% reported that they'd experienced one of the risks.
Mm-hmm.
And 70% of their family or friends had. Whereas in more mature markets, so countries that have perhaps had more ubiquitous internet mm-hmm. access for yes. a longer time, these risks really, really dropped.
Mm.
So countries like the United Kingdom, Australia, Germany, their risks were much lower than South Africa. We mentioned this at the start of this session, but why do you think sort of those countries are faring better than countries like South Africa, Mexico, Russia? Is it just they've had it for longer?
Yeah, I think my response would be it's just been there a lot earlier and it's been able to integrate into society so much more quicker and easier than it would have been in South Africa. Our infrastructure, politics, the economy, the entire market and how we... I mean, we only started emailing in the mid-90s or early 90s. We actually started thinking about what email was. But only, 94, 95, the internet was really starting to then finally happen in South Africa. So I think the reason we are so high in terms of percentages is because it's still so new in a sense.
It's new and we're busy figuring out how to behave in this in this new space.
That's right.
And people are perhaps have access to the internet, but are still quite new users of it.
Mm.
So they haven't yet figured out, actually, I can block people.
Yes.
And I can set my privacy settings in such a way that not everyone can see this
yes.
stuff. And if somebody sends me a Skype contact request and I don't know that person, I don't need to accept the accept the contact request if it's not somebody I know.
Yes.
So hopefully with time and with maturity and also with parents, catching up to their children and figuring out what they're up to and starting to have those discussions, at home around what's acceptable internet use for our family and schools like yours being proactive about putting policies in place.
Yes.
Hopefully the next time Microsoft does one of these surveys, South Africa will fare better.
Let's hope.
The other thing that was interesting to me was how the statistics for young people compared to adults. And 58% of youth had never met the offender, whereas for adults it was less so. And why do you think that is? Are young people just more active on these platforms where strangers are?
Yes, I think so. If I look at the students that I teach, they are permanently connected to their phones. So every moment they have, there's a phone available and they will be texting or SMSing or WhatsApping or Instagramming someone or something. Every moment is recorded. Every picture is taken and sent to someone somewhere or uploaded somewhere. So that already has a greater reach in terms of who you're going to bump into online. And I think that's probably one of the reasons as well. They're way more connected than we ever were as adults. So,
They're just in that space more. So are
very
likely
much so.
to
very
come
much
across.
So. They've grown into that. They were born into that. Whereas we had to adopt it and evolve into it. The students today, teenagers today, they're born into that environment. So it's part of the way they live.
And we're not going to stop them. It's about teaching that responsible behavior. And also, particularly if they're interacting with people who they don't know, who they've never met, just making them aware that, this person sort of online who sounds so charming and so handsome and, wants to meet you may very well be...
someone completely different.
Yes. some truly evil, sort of old man who wants to sort of meet you for sleazy reasons.
Yes.
So making them aware that, if you don't know who this person is, at the other end of this phone number or, behind the pseudonym somebody's using online, investigate a bit more and don't reveal your own sort of real identity, your own address, your own phone number to somebody who you haven't met in person.
Yes, and it's great that you mentioned that because that is straight out of the curriculum as well from computer applications technology. We teach those very things as well. And we give our students tools to use and like and tips. Just don't say this, don't do this, don't put these pictures up, things like that. So at least in the schools, we've got something there.
Yeah, and just like they shouldn't be sort of sharing this information with somebody who they've never met, they also should be quite careful about who they share information or photographs with, who they do know.
Yes,
you know,
definitely.
your high school crush of today might be a vengeful ex-boyfriend next week.
True.
So, you know, sharing photos of yourself, you know, in your underwear or less is not a smart thing to do.
No, definitely not.
And
we see that in the media. I mean, every day in the newspapers, someone's done something with social media and it's just gone very wrong.
Yeah. So, and I think also as teachers and as parents, when those stories do appear in the media, it's a good opportunity to have a discussion, you know, and sort of say, well, you know, did you see this article?
Yes.
You know, this is what's happened because this girl, you know, sort of shared these photos and now, you know, they've been spread around the whole school or uploaded online. So that children are aware that these things can happen without having to, you know, learn the hard way themselves.
That's the reality.
So how can we be proactive as teachers and as parents? You know, the work that you do as a Microsoft Innovative Educator expert, as a you know, a teacher at your school working with your computer applications students, really shows that you're somebody proactive about using the internet for good. Mm. But we don't want teachers to hear about these horror stories and think, you know what, let me rather just leave that alone.
Yes, and block it away completely. Yeah.
What can teachers do to educate themselves and to try and use the internet for good?
It's a tough one because it really depends on the teachers and where they are at in terms of their own computer literacy and their own knowledge of the digital world. I would always say, you know, chat to someone in the school who is quite familiar with social media and with working online and websites and blogs and communicating with people, or go online and take a look and see what is available online in terms of websites that educate you on the dangers of the net and how to protect oneself.
Yeah, so educate yourself and
definitely.
Because then in your lessons, and maybe not as a structured lesson, but informally when the opportunity arises, you can then share what you've learned with the students. Mm. So a course that I'd really recommend teachers do is the Digital Citizenship course on the Microsoft Educator Community. For teachers there that don't know where to start or who are interested in this topic, or perhaps they're teaching it as part of, you know, These sessions are not just shown in South Africa, they're shown throughout Africa, but maybe teachers in other countries, you know, will cover this topic as part of a guidance lesson or part of an extracurricular program. But taking the digital citizenship course will really help to equip teachers with some of the skills and the knowledge for really setting up sort of sound programs at their school and for educating students. Something else I'd really encourage teachers to do is to get their students to take the Digital Civility Challenge. And, you know, at your school, you said you've got a code of conduct students sign. I know I've signed one for my daughter at her school. It was about 3 pages long. This brings it down to 4 simple points that even young children could understand. Mm-hmm. And the first is live the golden rule. So do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. If you wouldn't like, you know, your friend sharing photos of you that you know, don't make you look good, don't do it for them.
Yes, exactly. The
second point is respect differences. You know, share with others, but be aware that different people have different cultures, different norms, different ideas of what's acceptable. And just be aware of that when you're posting stuff out there. Pause before applying.
Oh, that's a good one. Very good one.
Because once you've tweeted in anger or or sent that sort of nasty email off, you may have second thoughts in the morning. Sometimes it's a good idea to just let it simmer for a bit in your drafts folder.
I think so.
And if you still feel that strongly, the next day, maybe read it again and tone it down a bit if need be and send it off then. But don't reply in anger. And this applies to emails, to tweets, to, commenting on other people's Facebook posts.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Calm down first.
Yeah.
And then the final point is stand up for myself and others. So, if somebody is, posting horrible photos about you or circulating rumors about you on social media or online or on, do something about it. Actually, show a teacher, chat to a friend, but don't just, hide it or pretend that it's not happening. Speak to your parents and make others aware. And stand up for others. If you see mean things being said about somebody else or, photos going around or posts going around about one of your classmates, do something about it. Take a stand.
I like these four rules. And it's interesting to note that although it's digital civility, this is kind of how we should be living anyway in the real world. They're just applying that to the digital world as well and saying, actually, we should just be who we are as best we can here as well as online.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense.
So, I mean, these are sort of age-old principles
exactly.
of what it is to be a decent human being.
Exactly.
That golden rule, it's found in all religions and all cultures, the idea of, doing to others as
That's
you'd
right.
have them do unto you. But this is a very simple thing that teachers could get their students to agree to. And actually setting this up as a class activity can just be something that opens up the discussion. Why should we be agreeing to this?
Yes.
And it provides a platform and an opportunity to discuss some of the points we've talked about
yes.
here.
And hopefully carries on through after school into their work, their careers, and how they behave online, once they're in the workplace as well. I think this is something that every school should do.
Oh, for sure. So we'd encourage, teachers to go online, print this out, and get your students to sign it. Also, we'd like to see the teachers sort of use the internet for good and model best practice. So you do a lot of this with your sharing of resources and collaborating with other
yes.
teachers. But it would be great if all teachers did this so that the students see them modeling best practice. And if teachers are good about, replying sort of promptly and politely to emails and, behaving within sort of acceptable norms on Twitter or whatever, if their students see what their teachers are posting, it models best practice.
Yes, definitely. And I think it would be good for more teachers to realize that the world is changing and we are in a very digital environment. And when someone, we don't phone parents so much anymore, as we email them now or WhatsApp or SMS, and we're in touch much faster that way. And just the etiquette that we use as professionals in a digital world, we definitely should be modeling that all the time, especially for students to mimic that as they go through school.
Yeah, and as you were saying earlier, move into their own careers and will behave, we hope, as responsible digital citizens
exactly.
then too. So the final slide gives people some contact details for if they'd like more information about digital civility and the research that Microsoft's done. And if you'd like to take that digital civility pledge or you want access to those resources, then the links are available. Do check them out. The main place to go is microsoft.com/safety. and take that digital citizenship course on the Microsoft Educator community and use the internet for good, for the power of professional development and continuous online learning. Matthew, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for sharing case studies and examples from your school, as well as from your experiences of running an online platform for other teachers, and your experiences in the classroom as a computer teacher. I think you do way more than just teach computers. It's about using the power of technology to create better citizens and students that are more prepared for life and the world of work beyond school.
I think so. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us. We've enjoyed having you on this Microsoft Virtual Academy, and we hope you'll tune into the next one. Bye.